ruled out the possibility. We've assembled a team we believe is the best of the best in their given areas for all the areas of training we provide. You can find more information at www.craftinternational.com. That's C-R-A-F-T-I-N-T-L. Building a company involves a lot of different skills I didn't think I had. It also involves a ton of admin work. Damn. I don't mind hard work, even if it is at a desk. One of the pullbacks on this job is that it's given me Dell hand. I spend a lot of time pounding a computer keyboard. And every blue moon I have to wear a suit and tie. But otherwise, it's a perfect job for me. I may not be rich, but I enjoy what I do. The logo for Kraft came from the Punisher symbol, with the Crusader crosshair and the right eye in honor of Ryan Jobe. He also inspired our company's slogan. In April 2009, after Somali pirates had taken over a ship and were threatening the captain with death, SEAL snipers killed them from a nearby destroyer. Someone from the local media asked Ryan what he thought. "Despite what your mama told you," he quipped, "violence does solve problems." That seemed a pretty appropriate slogan for snipers, so it became ours. Back in Texas. I was still conflicted about leaving the Navy, but knowing that I was going to start Kraft gave me more incentive. When the time finally came, I couldn't wait. After all, I was going back home. Was I in a hurry? I got out of the Navy November 4. On November 6, I was kicking Texas dust. While I was working on Kraft International, my family stayed back in the San Diego area, the kids finishing up with school and Taya getting the house ready to sell. My wife planned to have everything wrapped up in January so we could reunite in Texas. They came out at Christmas. I'd been missing the kids and her terribly. I pulled her into the room at my parents' place and said, "What do you think about going back by yourself? Leave the kids with me." She was tickled. She had a lot to do, and while she loved our children, taking care of them and getting the house ready to sell was exhausting. I loved having my son and daughter with me. I had a big assist from my parents who helped watch him during the week. Friday afternoons, I'd take the kids and we'd have daddy vacations for 3 and sometimes 4 days at a shot. People have an idea in their heads that fathers aren't able to spend comfortable time with very young children. I don't think that's true. Hell, I had as much fun as they did. We'd mess around on a trampoline and play ball for hours. We'd visit the zoo, hit the playgrounds, watch a movie. They'd help Dad grill. We all had a great time. When my daughter was a baby, it took a bit of time for her to warm up to me, but gradually she came to trust me more and got used to having me around. Now she is all about her daddy. Of course, she had him wrapped around her little finger from day one. I began teaching my son how to shoot when he was 2, starting with the basics of a BB rifle. My theory is that kids get into trouble because of curiosity. If you don't satisfy it, you're asking for big problems. If you inform them and carefully instruct them on safety when they're young, you avoid a lot of the trouble. My son has learned to respect weapons. I've always told him, "If you want to use a gun, come get me. There's nothing I like better than shooting." He already has his own rifle, a .22 lever action, and he shoots pretty good groups with it. He's amazing with a pistol, too. My daughter is still a little young and hasn't shown as much interest yet. I suspect she will soon, but in any event, extensive firearms training will be mandatory before she is allowed to date, which should be around the time she turns 30. Both kids have gone out hunting with me. They're still a little young to focus for long periods of time, but I suspect they'll get the hang of it before too long. Taya. Chris and I have gone back and forth about how we would feel if our children went into the military. Of course, we don't want them to be hurt or for anything to happen to them, but there are a lot of positives to military service. We'll both be proud of them, no matter what they do. If my son was to consider going into SEALs, I would tell him to really think about it. I would tell him that he has to be prepared. I think it's horrible for family. If you go to war, it does change you, and you have to be prepared for that, too. I tell him to sit down and talk to his father about the reality of things. Sometimes I feel like crying just thinking about him in a firefight. I think Chris has done enough for the country so that we can skip a generation, but we'll both be proud of our children no matter what. Settling in Texas got me closer to my parents on a permanent basis. Since I've been back with them, they tell me some of the shell that I built up during the war has melted away. My father says that I closed off parts of myself. He believes they've come back, somewhat at least. I don't think you can train for years to kill, he admits, and expect all that to disappear overnight. Down in the depths. With all this good stuff going on, you'd think I was living a fairy tale or a perfect life, and maybe I should be. But real life doesn't travel in a perfect straight line. It doesn't necessarily have that all lived happily ever after bit. You have to work on where you're going. And just because I had a great family and an interesting job didn't mean things were perfect. I still felt bad about leaving the SEALs. I still resented my wife for presenting me with what felt like an ultimatum. So even though life should have been sweet, for some months after getting out of the service, it felt like it was plunging down a mine shaft. I started drinking a lot, pounding back beers. I'd say I went into a depression, feeling sorry for myself. Pretty soon drinking was all I did. After a while it was hard liquor, and it was all through the day. I don't want to make this sound more dramatic than it really is. Other people have faced more difficult problems, but I was certainly headed in the wrong direction. I was going downhill and gathering speed. Then one night I turned a corner too fast in my truck. Now, maybe there were extenuating circumstances. Maybe the road was slippery or something else was out of whack. Or maybe that guardian angel that had saved me back in Ramadi decided to intervene. Whatever. All I know is I totaled my truck and came out without a scratch. On my body, my ego was something else again. The accident woke me up. I'm sorry to say that I needed something like that to get my head back straight. I still drink beer, though not nearly to excess. I think I realize everything I have and everything I could lose. And I also understand not just where my responsibilities are, but how to fulfill them. Giving back. I'm starting to understand the contributions I can make to others. I realize that I can be a complete man, taking care of my family and helping in a small way to take care of others. Marcus Luttrell started an organization called Lone Survivor Foundation. It gets some of our wounded warriors out of the hospital and into situations where they can enjoy themselves a little. After being wounded in Afghanistan, Marcus said he healed twice as fast at his mom's ranch than he had in the hospital. Something about the open air and being able to roam around naturally helped the process. That's one of the inspirations for his foundation, and it's become one of my guiding principles as I try to do my small share. I've gotten together with some people I know around Texas who have ranches and asked if they could donate their places for a few days at a time. They've been more than generous. We've had small groups of servicemen disabled in the war come in and spend time there hunting, shooting guns on a range, or just hanging out. The idea is to have a good time. I should mention that my friend Kyle, the same guy who was a driving force behind getting Kraft afloat, is also extremely patriotic and supportive of the troops. He graciously allows us to use his beautiful barefoot ranch for many of our retreats for the wounded troops. Rick Kell and David Faraday's organization, Troops First, also works with Kraft to help as many wounded guys as we can. Hell, I've had a bunch of fun myself. We go hunting a couple of times a day, shoot a few rounds on the range, then at night trade stories and beers. It's not so much the war stories as the funny stories that you remember. Those are the ones that affect you. They underline the resilience of these guys. They were warriors in the war, and they take that same warrior attitude into dealing with their disabilities. As you'd expect if I'm involved, there's a lot of busting going on back and forth, giving each other hell. I don't always get the last laugh, but I do take my shots. The first time I had some of them out to one of the ranches, I took them out on the back porch before we started shooting and gave them a little orientation. All right, I told them, picking up my rifle. Since none of you are SEALs, I better give you some background. This here is a trigger.
Screw you, Squid,
they shouted, and we had a good old time from there on out, pushing each other and making fun. What wounded veterans don't need is sympathy. They need to be treated like the men they are, equals, heroes, and people who still have tremendous value for society. If you want to help them, start there. In a funny way, busting back and forth shows more respect than asking, "Are you okay?" in a sickly sweet voice. We've only just begun, but we've had good enough success that the hospitals are very cooperative. We've been able to expand the program to include couples. We're aiming to do maybe 2 retreats a month going forward. Our work has gotten me thinking bigger and bigger. I wouldn't mind doing a reality hunting show with these guys. I think it could inspire a lot of other Americans to really give back to their veterans and their present military families. Helping each other out, that's America. I think America does a lot to support people. That's great for those truly in need. But I also think we create dependency by giving money to those who don't want to work, both in other countries and our own. Help people help themselves. That's the way it should be. I'd like us to remember the suffering of those Americans who were injured serving this country before we dole out millions to slackers and moochers. Look at the homeless. A lot are vets. I think we owe them more than just our gratitude. They were willing to sign a blank check for America, with the cost right up to their life. If they were willing to do that, why shouldn't we be taking care of them? I'm not suggesting we give vets handouts. What people need are hand-ups, a little opportunity and strategic help. One of the wounded vets I met at the ranch retreats has an idea to help homeless vets by helping build or renovate housing. I think it's a great idea. Maybe this house won't be where they live forever, but it'll get them going. Jobs, training, there's an enormous amount that we can do. I know some people will say that you'll have a bunch just taking advantage, but you deal with that. You don't let it ruin things for everyone. There's no reason someone who has fought for their country should be homeless or jobless. Who I am. It's taken a while, but I have gotten to the point where being a SEAL no longer defines me. I need to be a husband and a father. Those things, now, are my first calling. Being a SEAL has been a huge part of me. I still feel the pull. I certainly would have preferred having the best of both worlds, the job and the family, but at least in my case, the job wouldn't allow it. I'm not sure I would have either. In a sense, I had to step away from the job to become the fuller man my family needed me to be. I don't know where or when the change came. It didn't happen until I got out. I had to get through that resentment at first. I had to move through the good things and the bad things to reach a point where I could really move ahead. Now I want to be a good dad and a good husband. Now I've rediscovered a real love for my wife. I genuinely miss her when I'm on a business trip. I want to be able to hug her and sleep next to her. Taya. What I loved about Chris in the beginning was the way he unabashedly wore his heart on his sleeve. He didn't play games with my heart or my head. He was a straight shooter who seemed to back up his feelings and actions, spending an hour and a half to drive up to see me, then leaving in time for work at 5 a.m. Communicating, putting up with my moods. His sense of fun balanced out my serious side and brought out the youthful side in me. He was up for anything and completely supportive of anything I wanted or dreamed of. He got along famously with my family, and I did with his. When our marriage reached a crisis, I said I wouldn't love him the same if he reenlisted again. It wasn't that I didn't love him, but I felt that his decision would confirm what I thought was becoming increasingly evident. In the beginning, I believed he loved me more than anything. Slowly, the team started to become his first love. He continued to say the words and tell me what he felt I needed to hear and what he had always said in the past to express his love. The difference is, the words and actions were no longer meshing. He still loved me, but it was different. He was consumed by the teams. When he was away, he would tell me things like, "I would do anything to be home with you," and "I miss you," and "You are the most important thing in the world to me." I knew if he joined up again that all of what he had been telling me over those past years were mostly words or feelings in theory rather than feelings expressed in actions. How could I love with the same reckless abandon if I knew I was not what he said I was? I was second fiddle at best. He would die for strangers and country. My challenges and pain seemed to be mine alone. He wanted to live his life and have a happy wife to come home to. At the time, it meant everything I loved in the beginning was changing, and I would have to love him differently. I thought it might be less, but it turns out it was just different. Just like in any relationship, things changed. We changed. We both made mistakes, and we both learned a lot. Maybe we love each other differently, but maybe that is a good thing. Maybe it is more forgiving and more mature, or maybe it is just different. It is still really good. We still have each other's backs, and we've learned that even through the tough times, we don't want to lose each other or the family we've built. The more time that goes by, the more we are each able to show each other love in ways that the other one understands and feels. I feel like my love for my wife has gotten deeper over the past few years. Taya bought me a new wedding ring made of tungsten steel. I don't think it's a coincidence that it's the hardest metal she could find. It has crusader crosses on it, too. She jokes that it's because marriage is like a crusade. Maybe for us it has been. Taya. I feel something coming from him that I hadn't felt before. He's definitely not the person he was before the war, but there are a lot of the same qualities. His sense of humor, his kindness, his warmth, his courage and a sense of responsibility, his quiet confidence inspires me. Like any couple, we still have our day-to-day life things we have to work through, but most importantly, I feel loved, and I feel the kids and I are important. War. I'm not the same guy I was when I first went to war. No one is. Before you're in combat, you have this innocence about you. Then, all of a sudden, you see this whole other side of life. I don't regret any of it. I'd do it again. At the same time, war definitely changes you. You embrace death. As a SEAL, you go to the dark side. You're immersed in it, continually going to war. You gravitate to the blackest parts of existence. Your psyche builds up its defenses. That's why you laugh at gruesome things like heads being blown apart, and worse. Growing up, I wanted to be military, but I wondered, how would I feel about killing someone? Now I know. It's no big deal. I did it a lot more than I'd ever thought I would, or for that matter, more than any American sniper before me. But I also witnessed the evil my targets committed and wanted to commit, and by killing them, I protected the lives of many fellow soldiers. I don't spend a lot of time philosophizing about killing people. I have a clear conscience about my role in the war. I am a strong Christian, not a perfect one, not close, but I strongly believe in God, Jesus, and the Bible. When I die, God is going to hold me accountable for everything I've done on earth. He may hold me back until last and run everybody else through the line because it will take so long to go over all my sins. Mr. Kyle, let's go into the back room. Honestly, I don't know what will really happen on Judgment Day, but what I lean toward is that you know all of your sins, and God knows them all, and shame comes over you at the reality that He knows. I believe the fact that I've accepted Jesus as my Savior will be my salvation. But in that back room, or whatever it is when God confronts me with my sins, I do not believe any of the kills I had during the war will be among them. Everyone I shot was evil. I had good cause on every shot. They all deserved to die. My regrets are about the people I couldn't save. Marines, soldiers, my buddies. I still feel their loss. I still ache for my failure to protect them. I'm not naive, and I'm beyond romanticizing war and what I had to do there. The worst moments of my life have come as a SEAL, losing my buddies, having a kid die on me. I'm sure some of the things I went through pale in comparison to what some of the guys went through in World War II and other conflicts. On top of all the shit they went through in Vietnam, they had to come home to a country that spat on them. When people ask me how the war changed me, I tell them that the biggest thing has to do with my perspective. You know all the everyday things that stress you here? I don't give a shit about them. There are bigger and worse things that could happen than to have this little tiny problem wreck your life, or even your day. I've seen them. More, I've lived them. This is John Pruden. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged recording of American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history by Chris Kyle, with Scott McEwen and Jim DeFelice. This program was produced by Tantor Media Incorporated. Executive Producer, Karen Jakonski. Text copyright 2012 by Chris Kyle and Scott McEwen. Production copyright 2012 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.